On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Begin another broadcast week on the horn. It is the ninth day of February 2015. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, well, I invite one, all, and sundry who are listening during the live portion of the program to wander on by the chat room with a little bit of a note that, well, doggone it, the chat room's just not a lot of fun when the program's not live because there's usually no one in it. But I suppose that's to be expected. But during a live portion of the program, absolutely. Jump in, run by, come on over, say howdy to the gang. I'm sure we'll have a nice Moran Monday crowd because it is Moran Monday on the horn. And mercy sakes, ain't we got a stack full of them. Yeah. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and we've got a good group gathering in the chat room this evening. Good evening, Devin and Gerald and Jug of Punch and Kathy and Michael and Setia and Sparky, the indefatigable veteran, inveterate chat room moderator. There will be, as I said, more wandering by presently. And let me start the program by saying absolutely happy birthday, News Ninja Carol Baker. And many happy returns. I know she was hoping for a stripper for her birthday, but, well, in your honor, I'm doing naked radio, Carol. So, you know, I know, I'm a giver, just like you. happy birthday. Happy birthday indeed. Let's see. Where do we begin? Well, we begin with the fact that it's Moran Monday and the usual announcements, some programming notes for the coming week, just so you'll know, because, well, you know, I don't take days off. If you were to see, for instance, if you were to see the contract of, say, some right-wing blatherscape, say, an OxyContin-addicted, fake, phony Viagra prescription taking to little boy vacations in the Dominican Republic, Flush Flimball, for instance, you might note in there that he probably has in his contract something like 6 weeks vacation every year. Well, I don't take days off. I don't take weeks off. When I'm away from the microphone, there is generally a damn good reason for it. It's either technical or else I'm out somewhere trying to walk the walk as well as talk the talk, doing activism stuff. I don't think I'd know a vacation if it jumped up and kissed me. So if I'm away from the microphone, it's because there's stuff that has to be attended to, and this is one of those weeks. My daughter Margie, whom many of you very kindly went and liked her photograph from yesterday. Yesterday was Margie's 21st birthday, and so I posted a photograph of her with her first official legal beverage. She chose a Mai Tai. And many of you went and liked that photograph, and it tickled her pink, and you helped to make her birthday a very, very special thing. Well, she's got a medical procedure on Thursday that requires her to be at the medical center in Charleston at an insane hour of the morning, you know, like 8 a.m., something like that. And it's only an insane hour of the morning when you have to get there. So I would have to leave at about 3 o'clock in the morning to get there on Thursday and then drive another hour to Charleston and another hour back and then another 2 hours back over here. So instead, there will be no prayer meeting Wednesday this week. And depending on how the procedure goes and how long the procedure lasts, I may be, I may not be on the air on Thursday. So Wednesday is definitely out, and Thursday is possibly out because I'll be on the radio. I'm sorry, I'm reading a message from Devin right now. Naked radio, brr, shrinkage. I'll be on the road, you know, coming back on Thursday. So that's what the product schedule is. Program schedule is. Whew, man. Feel like Sarah Palin. Jesus. That's what the program schedule is this week. The production schedule. That's where that came from. And anyway, that serves as a bit of a preface to the week's fundraising and part of why we've been working on it all weekend. And I wanted to send thanks out, especially. Oh, Marty. Marty with an email. Nonsense! You may not have either day off. Take the portable and broadcast from her room. End snark. So anyway, that serves as a preface to note that we have been doing advanced fundraising for the coming week. And, well, you know, it would be nice if we actually got to say, no, I did not, Randy. I did not say to forget to say, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I said it. You forgot to hear it. See, this is the kind of staff we need in studio. But I said it. I know I said it. That's all toward noting that we did start fundraising over the weekend, and I want to send out thanks because we got a little bit ahead by a couple of days for this week. First and foremost, let's see. Let me back up. I want to thank Jason for catching us up on what we finished last week behind. Thank you, Jason. And I want to thank Ed, who was the originator and inventor of Have a Show on Me. Because this evening's More and Monday is brought to you by Ed. Thank you, Ed. And that took us into tomorrow. And just to make sure that we've got, I want to make sure it mentioned everybody. Thank you very kindly to Tony in Chico. Tony says, I'm sending this $50 along to you to use for matching funds promotion for this week. Say the Chief Justice Roy Moore Asshat Matching Funds promotion, or whatever, however you wish to use it. I think that's perfect, Tony. I read the news today regarding Judge Asshat, and I felt I had to support marriage equality by contributing to the horn. Cheers. So there it is. And in so doing, Tony finished off fundraising for tomorrow's program, with a challenge for everybody to jump in and match his $50 so that we will take care of what would otherwise be Wednesday and maybe Thursday, who knows. But that's the plan, okay? Thank you, Tony. Thank you very kindly. And with that having been said, let's see. There are some other thanks to go out. Thanks to Chris. And thanks to Jason, different Jason. And thanks to Don. Thank you, Don. And thanks to Carl. We have a fighting chance for the week, even though I'm going to be gone Wednesday and possibly Thursday. And it would be wonderful if folks would jump in and match what Tony just did. And that'll help us start on Wednesday. Because, like I said, I don't like to be gone, and I don't take days off. But when it's necessary, it is absolutely necessary. And so we're going to have one hole in the week on Wednesday. And this being a short month, February, it's going to be hard to reach the total fundraising goal. So that's there. And hopefully it'll all work out. Of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And the traditional U.S. Postal Service address, if you wish to participate that way, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And do please remember, checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, because I'm miles and miles and miles away from Boss Man Wayne, who handles such matters. And, I don't endorse the checks or the money orders, okay? All right, then. So, it is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we got a bunch. Oh, sweet Jesus, we got a bunch. I want to start... Oh, and a reminder, just a sec here. Anyway. It is Moran Monday, and I kind of want to get started, and thus we shall.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Indeed, the rising tones of the calliope music tell you that it is indeed Moran Monday on the Horn. We have for you behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas all manner of Morans. We have Birther Morans, Deather Morans, Ninther Morans, Tenther Morans, Bircher Morans, Booger Eating Morans, Libertarian Morans, Repig Licking Morans, one and all, for your amazement, for your disgust, for your shock, for your horror. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, as one of the greatest entertainment information bargains on the interweb tubes, perhaps in the entire media landscape today, your kind contributions keep the Horn on the air. Just remember, drop the nickel in the bucket on the way through the tent flap, and once you get inside the tent, hang on to whatever you've got worth hanging on to, because after all, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans.
You know, we've been staying kind of close to home lately, with some of the shenanigans being perpetrated down in Charleston, West Virginia, by the right-wing booger-eater legislature that has recently risen to prominence for the first time in 83 years. And, well, when you're out of power for 83 years and that's a lot of pent-up screwing up that you've got to make up for. Lost time, if you will. And as we have noted over the last couple of weeks, this new booger-eater moran, right-wing teabagging, bircher, deather, tenther, ninther majority is wasting no time. I was minding my own business yesterday, reading the paper, when I noticed that the president... Did I say anything about hockey pucks yet? Well, I am now. Get the hockey pucks. You're going to want them. So, Bill Cole is a millionaire auto dealer. Bill Cole is a millionaire who has a string of car lots in West Virginia, and he parlayed that into an inflated ego, a vastly overrated sense of self-worth, all operating on, I mean, if we were thinking of brains as operating systems, this would be what? The operating system for a TRS-80. You know, the Trash 80 from Radio Shack back in the day. One of those machines on which you could play such famous games as... You can't play games on that. Exactly. Bill Cole was asked and said in front of people who were writing things down... And I always have to add that lately because you just can't imagine somebody with a functioning brain actually saying something like this in front of a reporter going, no, say that a little more slowly. Bill Cole is one of the people who is leading the charge against decent working conditions and decent wages in West Virginia via the assault on, and you've heard it talked about here on this program, you've heard it talked about the prevailing wage bill, by which the Republicans are trying to make sure that people who work on construction, union and non-union, state jobs, don't make a decent wage doing it anymore. Right? Yeah. So, Bill Cole was asked about prevailing wage, and he said, and I'm not kidding, he really, really said this, and that's why he's our lead moron for Moran Monday, that construction workers in West Virginia, one of the poorest states in the entire union, construction workers in West Virginia earn, this is a quote, an unfairly high wage. Oh, really? This state that has the highest rate of adult general unemployment of any state in the union. Has people in it who are just making too damn much money. Just ask Bill Cole, who has gubernatorial ambitions. He will tell you. Gerald in the chat room has just done an arrow pointing to his name saying, unfair high wage earner. And let's understand how these goobers, how a goober like Bill Cole defines an unfairly high wage. I got my Gazetta ciphering machine out. Let's see, 40 hours a week times, let's say, okay, equals 1,400 times 52 equals... So according to Bill Cole, who is a multimillionaire, who has a jet plane for sale, not because he's tired of having jet planes or he's having to sell off the jet plane to cover debts or anything, but because, well, he's probably he's a car salesman. He's selling off the one plane so he can go and buy another plane. Right? See how it works? Yeah. This guy says that somebody who makes $60,000 a year is making unfairly high wages. Where does this dumb bastard think people come up with the money to buy his damn cars? There aren't that many millionaires in West Virginia running on over to Bill Cole Automotive to buy an automobile. Devin asking, link please. You need to look on my Facebook page. It's there. I posted it yesterday morning. And I then let Boss Man Wayne know about it, and he posted it to WV Construction Workers page as well. It was a story in the Gazette. And here's another Moran Monday thing. It wasn't even a headline story. The headline of the story, it was a buried lead. I mean, how does a statement like that not get splashed all over the top side of the fold in letters about the same size as Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor? Bill Cole says workers make too much money. But no, it wasn't. It was in a story by Eric Eyre, E-Y-R-E, over at WVGazette.com. And the actual headline was, Democrats say Republicans advancing radical agenda or something like that. And so when I opened it up on Sunday, I was just reading it casually because I saw the headline, you know, Republican radical agenda. Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they were, yeah. It's not like they're doing something they didn't promise they'd do. They're doing exactly what they promised they would do, for God's sakes. But lo and behold, I went reading of the story, and way down in the middle of the story, there's tucked away that quote from the president of the West Virginia Senate, Bill Cole, talking about prevailing wage, and actually said in front of reporters, I think construction workers earn an unfairly high wage. Now, that just goes to show you how backwards politics can be in a place like West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. You've got all the presidential wannabes from the Republican clown car for 2016. And one and all, they've started talking about income inequality. Of course, this is an equally moronic nomination insofar as they talk about income inequality because of the income inequality that one in our White House has created. Oh, please. And so, okay, that's fine, but if you're a tea bagger, booger eater, libertarian, John Bircher type in West Virginia, which, you know, that's the Republican caucus here, you didn't get the memo. So your millionaire Senate president and more or less leader of the Republican Party, unless you count Shelley Moore Capito, and I try not to even think about her, the the state level leader. No, you just walk in. Oh, I think construction workers is making too much of money. So maybe that gives you an idea of what the Morans are like today. How is somebody, and I mean, these are not rhetorical questions. When I ask questions, I invite commentary. How is somebody who makes $60,000 a year in what is largely seasonal work, so it's really not $60,000 a year a lot of the time, how is that person making too much money in the world of a millionaire who owns a jet? Question two. How is that not the lead to the news article? Question three. Will Democrats in West Virginia have the common sense to buy billboards all over the state and let Bill Cole, with a big old picture of Bill Kohler, Cole, and a quote, "Workers make an unfairly high wage," close quotes. Will the West Virginia Democratic Party have enough common sense to put that on billboards all over the state for the next 2 years? Gerald noting, "Oh, Bob, Bill Cole says it's all about saving the taxpayers money." I guess he's excluding as taxpayers those construction workers making those unfairly high wages. Because that's the only way you can make such a balderdash laden statement. Sheesh. That's how much stupid is just sort of flowing on and on over hill and under dale. Here in almost level west by coal, Virginia stand. But that's our starting place. It is by no means where we end. And making a bit of an ideological jump, we have an early nominee going back to Saturday, because this is just precious. Jonathan Hoenig, who was a guest on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and well, being more in Monday, how long did you expect to have to wait before we got to a Fox News TV Radio Rwanda story? Mm-hmm. Jonathan Hoenig was brought on to that network to talk about mandatory vaccinations, because we're still talking about it, because this country is so thoroughly broken down that we cannot come to an agreement that vaccines are good for people anymore. There was little to no debate, I suspect, about smallpox vaccinations or polio vaccinations. No. But you give Republicans and the birthers and the deathers and the ninthers and the tenthers and the booger eaters enough, and the libertarians, of course, the libertarians, enough time, and they'll screw things up. That's all they know how to do. They can't build anything. They can't grow anything. All they can do is destroy. And that's where we are.
We can't agree in this country anymore that vaccines are a good idea. At least not with anything near the consensus that we had back when people still remembered what polio looked like and what smallpox did. Or mumps, or measles. One of the talking heads over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Eric Bolling, was discussing a bill in the California legislature that proposed mandatory vaccinations regardless of religious belief. You know, common sense. And that's where Jonathan Hoenig jumps in. Oh, God. You're going to want the hockey puck. Upon hearing about the bill, Jonathan Hoenig, H-O-E-N-I-G, went into a frenzy. Think about where this could lead if government gets involved in science and medicine. Forced sterilizations, forced abortion, forced pills, forced treatments. Merca. You want to keep... And at the same time, and I did as much double-checking as I could, I saw references to people having parents of small children having measles parties. Now, these are parties where parents will take unvaccinated children around children who are contagious with the measles deliberately to induce the disease in their children, so they can get it and get it over with in childhood. You wonder if these dumbasses would hold smallpox parties or polio parties. Well, these dumbasses probably would, because they don't have any memory. They don't have any cultural grounding in why these vaccines are good to have. And so along comes a freak at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda who says that if children have to get a vaccination, it'll mean that the government will soon be forcing people to have abortions. I love that line. Think about where this could lead if government gets involved in science and medicine. Good question, Gerald. Hey, Bob, do you think we might be able to get one of those smallpox or measles or parties together for the West Virginia GOP? You wouldn't have to force them to go. They'd probably just dig up a real world-class crispy booger and start munching on it as they walk to the party. Otne ute itbre, if you one what I in me, the Republicans ray. Ixnay on the easels may Artie's pay. It's gonna be a rich and satisfying Morant Monday. Consider. Well, let's run to the email box real quick. Ron and Raleigh with a question. How about this? America, home of the freak, land of the trembling in their boots.
about the size of it, Ron and Raleigh. That's why I referred to us. I refer to us as this coward nation, C-O-W-E-R-E-D, coward, sitting drawn up into a fetal position in the metaphorical corner of our world, sucking our thumbs and waiting for the next thing that goes boo that scares the bejesus out of us. Jack in Shreveport with an observation going back to the wage issue. How is it that the phrase standard of living has virtually disappeared from all forms of communication? The phrase living wage wasn't one that people have used much in my lifetime. Minimum wage was mentioned, but it at last came up for debate. Standard of living is really what we're talking about when we speak of the hardships people are going through these days, or whether they might take a vacation with their family, or whether they have to live in fear of unexpected expense. And it was also a phrase I remember actual, real working people saying and the actual news media speaking about during my lifetime. And that is more than a passingly interesting inquiry, Jack. Because if we talk about people deserving a standard of living, or being entitled to one, well then, the right wing is right there waiting so they can holler, "Commies!" Because that's where we are. Working people wanting anything more than the most desperate, sad, pathetic subsistence existence is proof positive of commie socialist tendencies. At least according to the right wing. Why don't we just stop calling the right wing the right wing and just start calling them the Calvinists? Because at their core, that's what they are.
Well, the reason you're not making a good wage is because God doesn't love you very much.
It's Calvinism. Kind of hard to believe it, but even Bishop Willard Romney, who isn't even a traditional mainline Christian of any particular form, he's a Calvinist. You prosper when God loves you. You don't when he doesn't. But that's why we can't talk about standard of living. What else? Well, let's go where Tony and Chico took us with his challenge for this More In Monday. So the Supreme Court of the United States, by a 7-2 margin, refused to hear a request for a stay. On a federal court ruling in Alabama that would allow marriage equality to become the law in that state. In other words, Alabama would become, has become, is becoming the 37th state in the Union in which full 14th Amendment rights will be accorded relative to marriage to everybody in that state. Men may marry men, women may marry women. Men may marry women, women may marry men. Marry men? Who knew Robin Hood was here? Well, this is not sitting well with Alabama, and the fact that I even get to say this, with Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. Now, this man was removed from the bench once before for his insistence on violating the Constitution of the United States because of what Jesus done told him. And he's off and running again. Roy Moore is what you would call, and we've documented him on a number of occasions on this program, Roy Moore is what you would call a nullificationist. Go look up, and all you have to do is type his name into a search engine. Go look up John C. Calhoun. Okay? John C. Calhoun will immediately pop up, and the first thing you'll see is this crazy man photograph or portrait, or I think it's a photograph, of this wild-eyed freak from South Carolina who was a diehard devotee of the institution of slavery. This is the guy who said slavery is not only benign, it is a net social good. John C. Calhoun, back in the 19th century, and he was a proponent of what is known as nullification. The concept that the several states have the right to nullify any federal law passed by the Congress or any declaration of the Supreme Court of the United States that they don't like. Mm-hmm. As previously noted, we fought a bloody, brutal, hateful, miserable, god-awful nightmare of a civil war to sort out whether or not nullification really was a viable, and it was proven not to be. But you can't keep an old Confederate down. And Judge Roy Moore is nothing if not an old Confederate. The Attorney General of Alabama, Stan, asked the Supreme Court to keep same-sex marriages on hold until the case is finally decided. Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore, who does not have jurisdiction to enter any such order, entered an order directing probate judges in the state of Alabama, Stan, to violate the Constitution of the United States and to refuse to provide marriage licenses to gay couples. Why? Because in his order, Roy Moore, theocratic nullificationist, said that here in Alabama, we don't have to obey no damn laws from no damn federal government. Rumpf. What's sad, though, is that some probate judges in Alabama actually delayed issuing those marriage licenses. In 22 out of the, 9th grade civics, 67 counties in Alabama, in 22 of those counties, couples were denied marriage licenses today. In much the same way that that white supremacists tried to resist integration of public schools, in those 22 counties, some of those counties refused to issue any marriage licenses at all. So Jim Bob and Prunella couldn't get a marrying up license neither. And her being in the family way and all. In Mobile County, probate judge Don Davis just shut the probate office down to keep them homos from a-getting all murried up and getting Jesus angry with the state of Alabama stand. Mm-hmm. By the way, if the goddess of irony was at work in this story, how do I know? Because the federal judge
who issued the order that said Alabama would have to honor the whole 14th Amendment. Is a George Bush appointee. Not a George H.W. Bush appointee, but a George W. Bush appointee. And Judge Roy Moore, I mean, he is 17 shades of pissed off. And one, and the sad thing is, there's really not a lot to be done about Roy Moore. He's about as nasty as they come. He is a theocrat of. He would gladly abrogate every law in the United States and replace it with nothing but Old Testament law. You know, stoning disobedient children, murdering people for eating. For putting a couple of shrimp on the baddie, that kind of thing. Not our Barbie, the barbecue, just to keep things square. Yeah. Oh my God! I just got this from I just got this from Birthday Girl News Ninja Carol Baker. It's a citation or a link to a book by Stephanie Messenger. Melanie's Marvelous Measles. Oh, dear God. Melanie's Marvelous Measles is a book written by Stephanie Messenger, who has devoted her life to educating people about vaccines and natural health choices. This book takes children on a journey to learn about vaccinations for childhood illnesses like measles and chickenpox. Stephanie Messenger elaborates by saying, Melanie's Marvelous Measles was written to educate children on the benefits of having measles and how you can heal from them naturally and successfully. Often today, we are being bombarded with messages from vested interests to fear all diseases in order for someone to sell some potion or vaccine. Really? Vaccine is an interchangeable term for potion? When in fact history shows that in industrialized countries, these diseases are quite benign, and according to natural health sources, I'm guessing Stephanie Messenger never had measles. They're beneficial to the body. Having raised three children vaccine-free and childhood disease-free, I've experienced many times when my children's vaccinated peers succumbed to the childhood diseases they were vaccinated against. Surprisingly, there were times when my unvaccinated children were blamed for their peers' sickness, something which is just not possible when they didn't have diseases at all. Remember Dr. What was Dr. Asshat's name? Who cares? My child is pure! Melanie's Marvelous Measles. And as is always the case, often the case with the reviews at Amazon.com, we have a correspondent. If you enjoyed this book, you're gonna love other titles from the same author. Abby's Absolutely Abundant Abscess. Addie's Adorable Adenoma. Adelia's Addled Alzheimer's. Andy's Amazing AIDS. Anne's Incandescent Anorexia. Annette's Astonishing Aneurysm, Annie's Awesome Asthma, Arnie's Artful Addiction, Barack's Baroque Barbiturate Overdose, Barry's Bitchin' Barry Barry, Beatrice's Bawdy Bronchitis, Bella's Beloved Bell's Palsy, Bennett's Breathtaking Boil, Bertha's Blossoming Bulimia, Billy's Bodacious Botulism, Bobby's Bitchin' Bubonic Plague, Bobby's Bubbling Buboes, Bob's Bodacious Bone Break. Hey! Boris's Big Blister. I don't know if I'm afraid. I don't know. I think I'd have to. I don't think I could. I don't want. Carl's cool cauliflower ear. Carl's chewy cancer. Carol's calm coma. No. Carol's copacetic chlamydia. Why are they beating up on Carol? Carrie's cavernous caries. Carrie's cordial complications. Christian's crazy Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome. Chuck's champion chicken pox. Clarissa's classy Klippel Troyanane syndrome. Emma's exalted emphysema. I've been having a hard time finding a way to tell my children why they have to suffer through dangerous and potentially debilitating diseases that were almost eradicated by vaccines. Thanks to Melanie's marvelous measles, I now have an easy reader guide that makes my eldest feel less down about the fact he's been crippled from polio. Apparently telling him your grandfather had it in the 1920s and he lived to be 52 thanks to a weakened heart just hasn't cheered him like it should. Chloe, my 3-year-old, was worried about the horrible scarring that came along with the case of rubella. Don't worry, dear, I told her. Remember Melanie's marvelous measles? Melanie is more beautiful for her scars. If you kids don't get sick, how else are we going to go on to build a glorious master race? Unfortunately, the encephalitis she suffered from the high fever the measles caused means I have to repeat this over and over, but the little girl on the cover gives her hope. And really, what else can we give our children? In fact, Melanie's marvelous measles has inspired me to seek out and expose them to a variety of diseases that previously only affected poor, underdeveloped countries. Think of the unique life experience the bubonic plague could bring. Too bad smallpox is so hard to get. Those horrifying blemishes they leave would be a real conversation starter for myself and my horribly misshapen children. If you think about it, really, I'm giving my white, middle-class, suburban offspring a great chance to understand equality in a way my college professor assured me Karl Marx would appreciate. After all, what unites the proletariat like sickness? It's also a great chance to teach them how fun poverty can be. Just think of all the unique money-saving techniques we can devise so we don't have to contract dengue fever in a 4-star hotel. Ay, ay, ay. Melanie's marvelous, Jesus. But then again, it's worth noting that, let's see, when was this? It's a couple of days ago. According to the Beckerhead, the measles outbreak is a hoax. He said, the measles hoax. Is it possible we have been lied to about the measles, this outbreak? What they want you to do is get yourself a herd mentality and grab your children and obey the government. And Beck is, of course, part and parcel of, and this deserves to be mentioned, part and parcel of a vogue, if you will, that I have seen developing over the last couple of weeks. You know where the measles is coming from, don't you? Yeah. It's them immigrants. Yeah, them immigrants is done brung the measles here to America where we didn't have the measles till them immigrants come. Now, bear in mind that we have the United States vaccination rate has sunk to being the equivalent of the vaccination rate in Zimbabwe. Not being critical of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe does the best it can. But that's where the United States are. Meanwhile, the vaccination rates for them immigrants is actually higher in places like Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras and Costa Rica and El Salvador and Nicaragua. But God forbid that the right wing should take note of, well, you know, science, because where's the how are you going to get
Moran's all worked up if you're doing that. Let's see, who was it? Well, daggummit, I had it the other day. But I think there's something... Something that makes me think it was Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks. Let me just look here. There it is. Yep. From AL.com. Mm-hmm. Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks. No, not Mo Brooks. Les Brooks, please. Has decided to blame vaccinated immigrants for the measles outbreak. And he did it on the radio. Do let's listen in.
The liberal press is trying to make hay with this story concerning an outbreak of measles, and we have had a significant uptick in 2014. Do you believe there's a correlation between the number of individuals coming into the country unvaccinated for the measles and the number of cases that we've seen across the United States?
Across the United States?
Notice the use of the verb believe. That most dangerous word in the entire English language. Do you believe there's a correlation? Well, now I'm no math whiz. Well, if we've learned anything over the course of the last 10 years of broadcasting here, we know that, right? I'm no math whiz, but isn't a correlation something that you prove or disprove as opposed to believe? A correlation is something you would say use statistics to prove? Mathematical statistics? Yes? Yes. It's not something you believe. But never mind, the question is out there, and Mo Brooks is about to tell us what he believes.
I don't think there is any healthcare professional who has examined the facts who could honestly say that Americans have not died because the disease is brought into America by illegal aliens who are not properly healthcare screened as lawful immigrants are. It might be the enterovirus that has a heavy presence in Central and South America has caused deaths of American children over the past 6 to 9 months. It might be this measles outbreak. There are any number of things. We in America have to understand that we truly are blessed with the best health care in the world. We are also blessed with the wealth necessary.
Now, hold on a minute there, Cletus. We got the best health care in the world. In the best country in the world.
Unless, of course, you can't get access to the health care, which, of course, Mo Brooks, being a teabagging idiot, wants to make sure people can't do. Because he hates him some Obamacare. You go in to get your Obamacare and they stick a needle in your arm, they tell you they're vaccinating you, the next thing you know, you got the socialism running through your bloodstream. Gadsden flag waving Tea Party freak.
Do you understand there's a reason to really, really worry about America going forward? This is, and I'm not trying to diminish it by any stretch of the imagination. This is measles we're talking about. Now, we had a full-on freak out over Ebola that nobody got. Ebola! Chris Christie made an innocent woman sleep in the yard in a quarantine tent over it. But see, that was because that was one of them colored diseases. And you notice how he starts talking about, Mo Brooks starts talking about enterovirus?
I don't think you can really get around noting that, you know, they got a lot of it in Central and South America, and they probably done brung it here. Because I have the IQ of concrete.
To properly raise kids and give them things that aren't given in other parts of the world. And unfortunately, our kids just aren't prepared for a lot of the diseases that come in and are borne by illegal aliens. Now,
we're not talking about enterovirus, dipstick. We're talking about the measles. And we're infected, for lack of a better word, by people who think that the measles vaccine is going to give them autism, even though that has been scientifically debunked and debunked again and debunked some more. You know, there may be a linkage between mercury and autism, but it isn't via vaccine. Because we have a whole hell of a lot more. Do you realize it's entirely likely that in a month of breathing, just breathing the air that looks like you can't see it, but it's got ultrafine particulates in it, anywhere in this country that they burn coal for power, you realize you're taking in probably more mercury than if you were getting an injection a day. I mean, we have actual, honest-to-God, no-kidding warnings to pregnant women in the United States of America. And when I think about this, it really does. It makes me want to scream. Pregnant women in the United States of America are warned against eating fish. What, more than once a month? Because there is nowhere on this planet where mercury has not become a problem in the fish population, but especially in freshwater areas. Lord God, Billy Bob, fried catfish, yum. Don't do it. Not more than once a month, anyway. Or the next thing you know, you'll be sitting at a tea party talking to a rabbit. About hats. Oh, back to Mo Brooks, because we got more stuff to do than this measles business.
Now, you know, you have to have sympathy for the plight of the illegal aliens. I think we all understand that, but they have not been blessed with in their home countries with the kind of health care, the kind of immunizations that we demand of our children in the United States.
Liar! Again. The countries to the south of the United States are pretty serious about vaccines. ...98% vaccination rates and so forth. Certainly higher vaccination rates than we have here in the United States of America. So this guy just gets behind a microphone and starts lying about stuff. Because there's nobody over there in the right wing to challenge him. I mean,
if whoever this prattling booby is who had him on his program were to challenge him and say, well, but sir, Mexico has a 98% vaccination rate. Well, Mo Brooks would never appear on his program again. It's that simple. So, no challenge.
For example, if you're an American-born child, you have to go through, generally speaking, you have to have certain kinds of immunizations before you can even get into school.
Now,
well,
wait a
that requirement, to some degree, is suspended.
Now, hold on a damn minute. As we discussed last week, West Virginia, which now has a bill in the pipeline, is one of only two states in the union that does not have a religious exemption for vaccinations. You know, where Ma and Pa sign the affidavit that says that they have received instructions from their handlers through the fillings in their teeth from the master people on Norblap 7, that if they get their child vaccinated, everybody's going to be having the mark of the... We had a guy in West Virginia who won a court case a couple of weeks ago because he said a scanner would give him the mark of the beast. And such a religious claim is sufficient to keep parents from having to vaccinate their child and still allow the child into the public school system. Now, what's this about? What's this, Mo, about being as how the illegal brown people they don't vaccinate as good as we does here in America?
Generally speaking, you have to have certain kinds of immunizations before you can even get into school. Well, that requirement, to some degree, is suspended for illegal alien children.
That
exposes American children to diseases they otherwise would not have been exposed to. Again, you've got to have sympathy for the illegal alien child that is burdened with this disease, but you also have to do what you can to protect American kids from the suffering and sometimes death associated with this disease.
Oh, my God. And, of course, there is no empirical proof whatsoever. That immigrants are causing the measles outbreak. Meanwhile, the Becker head also noted, well, you know, where he was saying the measles vaccine, the measles outbreak was a hoax. Oh, of course this wasn't started by a Filipino woman who gave it to, because the government doesn't want you to know that. I said that. It, by the way, as far as Mo Brooks is concerned, this is the same Mo Brooks who said that the Democratic Party was engaged in a war on whites. Morons everywhere. And it's not all measles stuff. Well, it's not all. They're just all over the place. They are. They're out there on a variety of topics. Let's check in, because I think maybe at least once she's been a nominee on Morin Monday. Let's check in with Star Parker. She used to be on The View or something, didn't she? Yeah. So the other thing that the right wing, the baggers, the birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the booger eaters, the birchers, the libertarians are outraged with, that Obama
talking about the religion there at the praying breakfast. Bumpus news!
The Star Parker has now weighed in an interview, and I got to warn you that this isn't so much about hockey pucks as it is just, you know, if Mark Levin's voice is in this clip, just try to get past it. But what you want to hear is Star Parker turning on her own personal outrage machine in regard to that one, having the nerve to talk about all the people Christianity has killed over the centuries. Oh, Star!
It was my first time ever going. And frankly, it's 3 days of these folks flying in from all over the world to try to figure out how can we do the ultimate of libertarianism. You know, your freedom stops at my nose. Let me be Jewish. Let me be Muslim. Let me be Christian without interference and without war. And
you know what? If you can be a Jewish Muslim Christian without having your head explode, you're way ahead of the rest of us, Star. But we didn't know you were so diverse.
I mean, it was verbal rape. Frankly, what the president?
What? We're going to have to go back. I'm sorry. We just is.
It was my first time ever going. And frankly, it's 3 days of these folks flying in from all over the world to try to figure out how can we do the ultimate of libertarianism. You know, your freedom stops at my nose. Let me be Jewish. Let me be Muslim. Let me be Christian without interference and without war. And I mean, it was verbal rape. Frankly, what the president did was verbal rape. He stole all the energy in the room. He stole from all of us. He stole the momentum in the room. He stole from our country. He stole from the world. Because these are really big questions that were being asked. And frankly, you know, I don't visit retirement homes much because I don't like the sippy soup. And it was pretty sippy for me because I'm a conservative. You know me. I'm very adamantly conservative.
You're very adamantly insane. I had no idea that the rape disease was something that, well, okay, that's not fair. It's not that I had no idea. I guess I just don't spend as much time thinking about it because mostly it's right-wing men who are out there talking about whether rape's rape. And, I mean, you know, if my wife's not conscious and I just kind of roll over and go a-rutting away on my May Eller for a little while, is that really rape? That kind of thing. But to hear Star Parker describe remarks on religion as verbal rape? I guess this program is not the time nor the place to try to explain why it is that referring to anything but rape as rape is a problem. I mean, I've been guilty of it. And because I try to continue to grow as a human being, I moderate and modify my language. And I've seen this, for instance, in the struggle against mountaintop removal, where people will say, they rape the mountains! No! Quit it! Stop that! They were raping the earth! Shut up! You may describe the depredations that are being perpetrated upon the planet and upon the people who live near these operations in any variety of terms, but rape ain't one of them.
Well, I mean,
rape is rape. It's not that complicated. There is no such thing, contrary to the processes taking place in the thin gray settlings between Star Parker's ears that pass for brains, there is no such thing as verbal rape. Yeah, that's what I thought, Carol, News Ninja Carol Baker, and Birthday Girl, pointing out Star Jones used to be in The View. Star Parker is another idiot with a shoplifting record. Oh, God. Really?
Ah!
Oh, wait. Okay, I closed that too quickly. I may have misunderstood that. I'm sorry. Star Parker was not on The View. Star Jones was. Okay. Well, I was star-crossed now, wasn't I? Ooh, a Shakespeare reference. Yay me. So, Star Parker is a conservative, and therefore, what? She feels entitled to use the term? And okay, this one's open for discussion, too, when we open up the phone lines. Is it okay? Is this one of those situations where it's not okay for males to refer to things as rape that aren't rape, but it's okay if you're Star Parker? Because I'm getting confused. But, you know, no matter what I say. Oh, you're going to hell, Carol Baker. You're going to hell. I'll be right there with you. Yep. No matter what my objections might be, let's do remember that there are no rules in right-wing world, white-wing world, and it's allies, shall we say. There are no rules for the about nasty things. There are no nasty things you cannot, let's just put it plainly. There are no nasty things you cannot say about Barack Hussein Obama. You can say anything about him, and the right wing will say, "Well, absolutely, because he hates America." Witness the fact that Star Parker says that Barack Obama stole all the took he stole things. He stole the energy. He stole from all of us. He stole the momentum. He stole from our country. He stole from the world. Because that's how those people are, you know, and they steal.
I'm Christian, and so to sit through, you know, listening to people from Janice Hahn to Louie Gohmert and how they pray together, or some of the other speakers from Alto Holt from Alabama to Vargas in California, how they pray together. I mean, there was a rabbi that opened in prayer, and then the king of Jordan himself was supposed to read the scripture, and believe it or not, the New Testament scripture, and he just couldn't be there because he had to go back and deal with the crisis in his land. And then he was also the keynote speaker for the luncheon. So all of these things happened up until then. The keynote address was by a NASCAR driver, this guy Darrell Waltrip, who told his testimony. And in fact, he was the first one to use that whole high horse, because in his testimony, he said he had to get off his high horse and get on his knees after a major accident he had had, and his wife had been praying for him forever, and then he ended up in a born-again experience. This is what we were listening to. This is what we were doing, all this prayer, all these people. And then the president gets up and totally politicizes it. It was verbal rape. You could feel the energy leave the room because he is so adamant about his secular humanism. And you know, these are certainly big questions, but he reduced that whole meeting to meaninglessness. And it was just bad.
You know what's interesting, though? I've seen the transcript of what Barack Hussein Obama said there at the National Prayer and Breakfast. And by the way, you know what that Hussein means, don't you? Yeah. Carol Baker pointing out that Hussein is Kenyan for one twice. Whipped your ass twice! But no, what... I've seen his remarks, and as a person who refuses to believe in the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, I think I'm in a unique position to analyze remarks like this. if I had the country of my dreams, I would have enlightenment types who were committed to governing without recourse to religion so as to let all the religions practice happily. So when I saw the transcript of Barack Hussein Obama's remarks, you know, we have to say that Hussein means one twice in Kenyan. When I saw the transcript, I thought, my goodness gracious, there's certainly a lot of religion in these here remarks. Because he was talking about his personal faith, which he obviously apparently has. And good for him under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Meanwhile, however, Booger Eater Star Parker thinks that it was a secular humanist agenda simply because he discussed the history of bloodshed with which Christianity is hopelessly imbued. Yeah. But Star Parker is small fry when we're talking about having a hissy about that one's remarks on the homicidal nature that Christianity has periodically indulged itself in. Before we leave her, though, a note from Jack in Shreveport. An extreme libertarian is an idiot to start out with, blabbing on the topic of religion for two reasons. A religious fundamentalist's job is to get into everybody else's business and tell the other which one of them is right, thus going past the nose that Parker mentioned. And secondly, it's so much simpler to show the ridiculousness of libertarianism with economic arguments. Shaking my head, Jack in Shreveport. Kevin in Colorado Springs. So if not for those illegal brown people, is this Moran Monday idiot saying that it's all the fault of brown people? If we had a lily white nation, then we would be disease free, never to worry about anything at all. If that's so, then beam me up somewhere, Scotty, somewhere, anywhere, far away from these people. Signed, Kevin. Obligatory Star Trek reference now taken care of for the evening. Ay, ay, ay. So, okay, one more bit of prayer breakfast moranity. And really, who better than the Reverend Brother Pastor Minister Governor Mike Huckstorby? Mike Huckstorby, who recently tried to deflect a little bit of heat because somebody has gone digging around in his past, they call that opposition research, and found a column written by the young Mike Huckstorby back when he was 18 years old or so, 17, something like that, all about how the good Baptist Christians shouldn't be a-dancing. Really? It's straight out of Footloose. Not kidding. Okay, shouldn't be a-dancing. Not even so much as the Hot Springs two step or the Little Rock minuet. Mm-mm, no dancing, no. And in defending that, he said, "Well, yeah, I mean, I was a teenager, and I mean, I advised people against dancing. At least I wasn't a member of the Chum Gang." Being a reference, of course, because you can say anything nasty in the world you want to about Barack Obama, you know, because Barack Obama, because he whipped your ass twice. And when he was a teenager, he was spending his time much more profitably by apparently going out and honking away on the occasional doobie. Mm-hmm. There you go, Carol Baker. Regarding Huckstorby, his kid was dancing when he hung that stray dog and slit its throat and beat it to death and lynched it. You betcha. So Mike Huckabee told the world that he is a better human being than Barack Obama because he was advocating people not dance instead of running around smoking the marijuana. I guess it's possible Mike Huckabee got through life never smoking of the marijuana. It probably explains his, you know, his present status.
You dick!
Exactly. But it's not like Mr. Hond ever had to walk up to Mike Huckabee and ask him any questions like this.
What are you people, on dope?
Right. No, Mike Huckabee is so much better than Barack Hussein Obama because Mike Huckabee is godly, Christian, and white. Mm-hmm. And so, with the full mantle of authority given him, so he tells us by his invisible friend, he can tell us that his invisible friend, the great big white bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, was really pissed off by Barack Obama mentioning the fact that God only knows how many people have been killed in his name by, you know, the church. Right? Yeah.
After he claimed that the savagery of radical Islam started with Christians and that they should get off their high horse.
Well, actually, no, he didn't say that. He said that Christians ought not get on their high horses because Christianity has a history of bloodshed and murder in the name of Christ. He didn't say that, no. But that's okay. It's Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and they can just make shit up as they go.
Totally pro Obama on this. I think he said the right thing. Listen, it was a gospel of humility.
Joining me now with his reaction, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, author of God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy.
God, guns, grits, and lipids. And by the way, the person interviewing him is none other than that walking proof that it is possible to be mistaken as for a human being when you actually don't have a functioning brain. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, in other words.
Governor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Elizabeth. The very comments that President Obama made are nothing short of shocking. How on earth he could go back 1,000 years in history and pick up something that Christians did in response to Muslim aggression.
Oh, and that's the meme, of course, because that was the same thing that Bill Donahue was hooting about last week. That, oh, the Muslims done started it, so we're down to 2-year-olds. He done it first. How can the Muslims have started it when it was their land in the first place? Just asking. I mean, the Crusaders had to invade the Levant. The European, which means largely Germanic and Frankish and some British, Crusaders had to leave. You know, if we had animation, we'd have a little dot, 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 dot. Had to leave Europe and go over to Asia, which at that time was deemed to be a separate continent, although a lot, I think geographers now say Eurasia is one great big continent. But they had to leave where they were to go and take Jerusalem. And, you know, if you believe that that's defending something, then you probably also believe that we have to fight them over in Iraq so we won't have to fight them over here. Because that same bullshit excuse was promulgated 1,000 years ago. Precisely, Carol Baker, the same way the Indians were the aggressors when we came to steal their land and commit mass genocide for Jesus. Idiots. Idiots. How dare he? Well, let's get back to the Reverend Pastor Minister Brother Mike Huckstrebe's outrage machine.
The very comments that President Obama made are nothing short of shocking. How on earth he could go back 1,000 years in history and pick up something that Christians did in response to Muslim aggression and somehow blame Christians for the burning of a Jordanian pilot, for the cutting off the heads of children who were Christians? It's just absolutely stunning to me.
Sure.
Especially, in fact, in the light of the fact that he did none of that. But let's remember that Mike Huckstrebe is an evangelical fundamentalist, and therefore, a liar. I mean, if Mike Huckstrebe was sitting right here next to me and said, you know, Bob, clock says it's 7:30, it's February, I'm going to tell you it's dark outside. I'm going to the door to check. Because the man can't help lying. Because he's a liar. And that's what liars do, lie.
You know, I think a lot of people are upset, too, because there was something that was happening at the same time. Not only was he having the audacity to get out and name Christians somehow and having anything to do with what happened last week and the week before, but also not naming radical Islam for what it is. So not having the courage to call out the true enemy that lit the match that burned a man alive, yet calling out Christianity. And you say?
And I say, brooga, 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 brooga. Mark of the Beast, Revelations, Antichrist, Antichrist, snake flags, pompouses.
He never once in his speech said we are fighting against Islamic jihad. He never even said that these people are a perversion of Islam, even though everyone who is in the fight says it is. Everyone except Barack Obama. He also...
Everyone except Barack Obama. I mean, nobody, everybody said, yeah. Well, Mike Huckstrebe, you say that Islam is just slime. So that would be everybody but you and Barack Obama, but of course you don't, we're not in the same breath or the same, no.
Brought in Jim Crow laws as if it was Christians who were responsible for racism in America.
This is the fun part. Yeah, that really pissed off Pastor, Brother, Minister, Governor Mike Huckstrebe. The nerve of that one in our White House to bring up Jim Crow laws and say that Christians done that. And he's going to give you his reason in a moment, but before he gets there. Before he gets there, can we consider that Jim Crow laws were laws? Okay, so we've got that covered. They were actual laws that were passed and put on the books. And can we also posit that laws are passed and put on the books by human beings? I don't think there's a lot of fight there. So they're laws that were passed and put on the books by human beings. And at the time the Jim Crow laws were passed, can we say that there was probably not one single Muslim in any legislative body that passed the Jim Crow laws? Can we say that? Mm-hmm. Can we also say that it is likely that there is probably something like that less than 1% of any member of any of the members of any of the legislatures that passed Jim Crow laws were atheists? Can we do that? Can we also say that it is probably likely that, say, less than 5% of the membership of any of the legislatures that passed the Jim Crow laws were Jewish? Yes, we can say that, too. So we've got, by process of elimination and deduction and reason, we have legislatures creating and passing Jim Crow laws, and the legislatures were, perforce, made up of, oh, by the way, probably less than 1% of those legislatures' memberships were women. So women didn't pass the Jim Crow laws. Jews didn't pass the Jim Crow laws. Muslims didn't pass the Jim Crow laws. Atheists and agnostics and freethinkers goddamn sure didn't pass the Jim Crow laws. Who does that leave? Oh, Hindus! No! Christians passed the Jim Crow laws. But Mike Huckabee, and this is my thesis, is a liar. So he can't come to terms with that. Well, those were Christians then, but we're better Christians now. We've learned our lesson. We only talk about the good old days of slavery when we think that there's nobody watching. Yeah. But wait, the explanation of Jim Crow is going to be hockey. It's hockey. You didn't put away the hockey puck, did you? I hope not.
It is. Everyone except Barack Obama. He also brought in Jim Crow laws, as if it was Christians who were responsible for racism in America. I think he's forgetting that it was the Christian movement led...
No! Wait, let him finish.
...by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who resisted racism, and many of the most staunch voices that helped to bring this country in a whole new understanding of racial justice were voices from the pulpits, and in fact... It was the pulpits of America. Yeah, some of them were wrong, but many of them were the ones who brought the conscience of the nation to get this right.
No, that is where he is simply historically wrong. Or, you know, he knows the truth and he's lying about it because he's a liar, Mike Huckabee. Ayatollah of America wannabe that he is. It is absolutely true, if we're going to talk in the context of slavery and abolition, it is absolutely true that there were objections to it in the church, or in some churches. Hint, those churches were not in the American South. And in fact, good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians were known to attack, tar and feather, run out of town on a rail, and otherwise torment the people who were known as abolitionists, who wanted to see the abolition, that's why they were called abolitionists, the abolition of slavery in the United States. This is not something that historians really debate. They're facts. And it's not some churches got it wrong, Mike Huckabee. It's that every church in the American South got it wrong. The Catholics got it wrong. The Presbyterians got it wrong. The Methodists got it wrong. The Lutherans got it wrong. Did I say Methodists? The Episcopals got it wrong. And they all did so citing passages from the Pauline letters saying, slaves, obey your masters as the church obeys Christ. It's something like that. So it wasn't some. In the American South, it was all, Mike Huckabee. And you know what? You trying to ride on the murdered sniper, the snipered back of Martin Luther King gets me very near something approaching vomiting. Mike Huckabee has never had the has never in any portion of his sad, sorry, woeful, misbegotten, miserable waste of breath and elements on this planet life near anything like the heroism of Dr. King. And there he is, trying to glom his pasty white ass onto the civil rights movement. When in point of fact, the civil rights movement was derided in church after church, white church after white church after white church, all over the American South and other parts of the country as well. And that's fact. Again, not something the historians are going to waste any time debating, because it is established as fact. The only place that's going to be debated is in those circles where we're all about teaching the controversy, when the controversy itself is manufactured out of whole cloth. Byron Della Beckwith went to church somewhere, baby. He wasn't an atheist. And neither were the church bombers, those knights of the Christian Ku Klux Klan in Birmingham. Yeah, Marty, I agree. MLK Jr. has been spinning at about 7 or 8 million RPMs by now. Yep. Michael in Madison noting, subject line evil. When describing Mike Huckabee as an evangelical fundamentalist, everything after evil is superfluous in my humble opinion. This man continues to terrify me. Mike Huckabee is evil. Full stop. I wish Willard hadn't dropped out, Michael notes. Sigh. I'd love to see him lose again. This huckster, though, Huckster Beelzebub, gives me the shivers. As he does me. And I don't think he's scaring. I don't think he's scaring nearly enough people. But back to Huckster B.
Same thing with slavery. This president has a high horse himself. It's his teleprompter. And what was shocking about this speech, this wasn't an ad-lib, off-the-cuff remark. This was scripted. He knew what he wanted to say, and how anybody, whether they're with the New York Times or anyone, can hear that speech and say, yep, that pretty well accurately reflected what's happening in the world. Elizabeth, I just can't even begin to fathom how they could defend it.
Sure, two things. Some would say, Governor, that in not naming radical Islam for what it is, it actually protects the real enemy. And secondly, you know, the circle of influence around the president have a lot of people concerned here. You know, he met with the group of initially unnamed Muslims.
Oh, wait. This is the I have here a folder containing the names of Muslim terrorists with whom Barack Obama has met. You know, that anniversary just came and went, the McCarthy anniversary. But let's back up for just a minute. The Reverend Pastor, Minister, Brother Governor Mike Huckabee says he can't imagine how anyone could defend Barack Obama's remarks. Well, that is because he cannot imagine living in a world full of reality. He cannot imagine living in a world where people actually know the history of what Christianity has done to people. But beyond that, and I'm still waiting for somebody to talk about Christianity's role in the native genocide in the Western Hemisphere. We still haven't gotten there. I mean, good for you, Barack Obama, bringing up the Crusades. Good for you, Barack Obama, bringing up Jim Crow and slavery. Good, because Christianity had an absolutely undeniable role in both. But when are we going to talk about a genocide that took in millions of people? Still nothing. Crickets. But there's a larger issue here. And that is that Mike Huckabee, and this is what's terrifying for these right-wingers who are fulminating so passionately about the evils being perpetrated by the Muslims, they are almost childlike in their incomprehension of the nature of power. They are almost infantile in this notion that someone can be motivated all the way to the immolation of a living human being or the beheading of others by nothing more than religion. Religion is a tool in the toolbox of the power-crazed. You would think that Mike Huckabee would recognize that in someone so similar to himself. Religion is the metaphoric language, Darmok and Jalad, that Huckabee uses to motivate his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, faithful followers. Is there any difference in ISIS-ISIL? Well, hell no. Of course not. the people who are behind ISIS, ISIL, are behind them for reasons having to do with authority and power, not religion. Religion is what you use to motivate the simple. Give me that old-time religion, give me that old-time religion, give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. It was good for Paul and Silas. It was good for Paul and Silas. You understand? Most great world religions can be boiled down to a few elements. Muslims got to bow to Mecca a few times a day and pray. Jews have to pray. Christians have to have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, whom they are free to imagine in any way they see fit. Which is why we have so many different sects and denominations of Protestantism. And even two or three different orthodoxies. And they come up with simplistic rules that allow simplistic people who are simplistically trying to get through the day and live to see tomorrow, and hopefully along the way have some questions answered about what happens when we die, when no one knows. No one knows. That bourne from which no traveler returns. Shakespeare reference too. And so you can sell tickets into heaven and out of hell. Go kill the infidel. God'll like you for it. Trust me, I talk to him every day. Elect me president of the United States of America. God will love you for it. We'll all prosper by it, and America will be great again. Trust me, I talked to him, and he told me to tell you that's what he thinks. Behind any religious violence, there are always people who are using it for their own personal, very human, very in-this-world ends. And Mike Huckabee doesn't comprehend that, or if he does comprehend that, he is not going to let the rubes in on the trick. Never smarten up a chump. I haven't even gotten to the hockey puck part yet, though.
Protects the real enemy. And secondly, you know, the circle of influence around the president have a lot of people concerned here. You know, he met with the group of initially unnamed Muslim leaders in the community here. Do you think that influenced his speech and why he was so protective of some, but yet not of others?
Now, wait a minute. Why would he want to protect the president of the United States, who is the president of all the United States? Why would he want to protect Muslims in this country? When in point of fact, this country has, and by this country, I mean the white, ignorant, redneck, booger-eaten, Bible-thumping, evangelical, fundamentalist part of this country, has been whipped up into a white, and I do mean white, hot fury, that has homicidal overtones about any and all Muslims. Why would Barack Obama want to tamp down anti-Muslim violence in a country that's ordered upon a constitution whose preamble says that we are going to promote the general welfare and provide for the common defense? Why would he want to do that? Well, because he's the president of the Muslim Americans, too, and yes, white Christians, he's your president, too. He whipped your ass twice to prove it. So, I mean, there's that.
I don't think that meeting influenced him. I think he's already influenced. I mean, everything he does is against what Christians stand for, and he's against the Jews in Israel.
Jesus! You got that? And we've got another story along those lines, too. Mike Huckabee, in this moment, has done everything but declare Barack Obama to be an apostate enemy of Christianity. He's done everything but issue a proscription against him. He's done everything but call for an inquisition into his faith. Well, no, not really. He's already done that too, hasn't he? Because he'll tell you, Barack Obama's no Christian. And Mike Huckabee's just the man to determine who is and who isn't. God Almighty. If there was a God, I'd beg him to help us all.
The one group of people that can know they have his undying, unfailing support would be the Muslim community. And it doesn't matter whether it's the radical Muslim community or the more moderate Muslim community.
See, he's an idiot, isn't he? Oh, wait a minute. We thought he would... No, he's just an idiot. The radical Muslim community has Barack Obama's back. Yeah, because they're just loving him for those drone attacks, aren't they? Good morning, my brother. Good morning, brother. I certainly hope our leader, the President of the United States, drones us some more today here in sunny Yemen. Afford yourself just a passing moment in which you can contemplate Mike Huckabee sitting in that chair behind that desk in that Oval Office. And see if it doesn't fill you with an ice-cold existential dread, the likes of which it'll take you a fifth of rot-gut liquor to get over.
He can be defensive of moderate Muslims and still be very, very clear in saying that the fanatical Muslims are the heart and soul of the war that is raging across this world. And unlike what he said when he said that it was the most dangerous threat in our nation right now in the State of the Union, the truth is he said that our greatest threat was climate change. Elizabeth, I assure you that a beheading is much worse than a sunburn, and this president couldn't watch a Western from the 50s and...
Oh, stop it for a minute, because we got to dissect this. A beheading is much worse than a sunburn. Now, I've got some notes in here from our buddy Robert in Australia. There has been much political chaos going on up over down under. An update on our current prime minister situation. Tony Abbott has survived a leadership spill, 61-39 votes, which means that Tony has just a little over 50% support of his own party's membership. So while it's over for now, it's not over, which means he'll be voted out on his next big screw-up. Knowing Tony, that shouldn't take long. Maybe there's a foreigner he could knight. Hey, Tony, I'm over here. I'd love to be Sir Bob. Sadly, we'll still be stuck, Robert notes, with the current version of the Liberal Party. But I mentioned Robert's news update from Australia and the political shenanigans taking place there. Because, you know what? If you get melanoma from exposure to the sun on a rapidly heating planet, you wind up just as dead as if your head had been cut off. You would think a guy as pale as Mike Huckabee might know that, but I guess not. So let's check here real quick. ISIS has beheaded how many people? 6? 10? Let's say they've beheaded 100. How many people die every year from climate change-related catastrophes? Well, none, because climate change ain't real. No. Tens of thousands, if not millions of people, are affected by climate change every year, and it ain't just a sunburn. But that just a sunburn language Mike Huckabee uses goes to show you exactly how vile he is. That he would make sport of the suffering of tens or hundreds of thousands of people on this planet in order to make a political point out of how much he hates the current president of the United States. He, Mike Huckabee, is disgusting. He is a pox that moves among us. And he wants to be the President of the United States. And now the line, and this is a beautiful thing, now the other part of the line about how un-American Barack Obama is. And I'm sure that Mike Huckabee sat up late coming up with that, with this, so you might as well enjoy it.
Heart and soul of the war that is raging across this world, and unlike what he said when he said that it was the most dangerous threat in our nation right now in the State of the Union, the truth is, he said that our greatest threat was climate change. Elizabeth, I assure you that a beheading is much worse than a sunburn, and this president couldn't watch a Western from the 50s and know the difference between the good guys and the bad guys, even if John Wayne was starring in the film.
Yeah, let there be screaming. A Western from the 50s. He couldn't tell the good guys from the bad guys. Could it be because maybe we understand a little bit more now? No. Let's not get all academic about it. If John Wayne was in the film, of course, John Wayne was a notorious right-wing bastard who, among other things, if the things I've read are correct, celebrated went to a party at the Reagan's house, I believe, the night that John Kennedy was murdered. The rest of the country had gone into shock and grief-induced mourning, but the Reagans were having a party, and they went on with their party, and along come the Duke. Well, hello, Pilgrim. Kind of nice to see that commie sympathizer got the brains put out of his head, isn't it, Ronnie?
Yeah, well, welcome, Duke. Can we get you a glass of champagne to celebrate, Mommy?
Yeah. Is Huckabee here talking cowboys and Indians? Because not everybody sees the cowboys as the good guys in those movies. Some of us see those movies as artifacts of a really, really disgusting period of cultural insensitivity and outright racism in this country. But I'm sure not Mike Huckabee, right? Yeah. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Yeah, okay, a little confirmation coming in from Jim. Yep, Kitty Kelly. Kitty Kelly account recounts that story of the party at Shea Reagan on the night of Kennedy's assassination in her biography. Yeah. Nope, no chaps tonight, Jim. It's straight-up naked radio, since I couldn't afford to send a stripper to Carol Baker. You know, at least we're there in spirit. And I know, Barbie, the ew factor is just making Barbie's skin crawl. There is another, we've got more Morans, but I hate to keep people waiting, so let's toddle on over to to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Oh, hey.
Tracy.
How are you, dear?
I'm well. How are you? I mean, I'm surprised and everything. I mean, I was kind of worrying about you, wondering where you've been and everything. Been too long.
I know, working, married, school, stuff like that.
Happens.
But I'm just... It happens. Life happens. And I try not to call in as much because then I go on these rants and then it's just not healthy. Well, it actually is healthy to go on rent because it gets out all the toxins.
Yes.
And it kind of makes you feel better. But because I just came in, so is Huckster talking about the State of the Union address?
No. He was talking about the pray and breakfast address that one in our White House gave last week and got all the evangelical Bible thumping but not much reading Christians upset, because he said that Christianity has killed a few tens of thousands of people along its long history.
And nobody has ever opened a book. I mean, let's just talk about this, because we're talking about the Crusades and in the name of Jesus, right?
Yeah, right. You know, 11th century, that kind of thing, taking the cross.
And how Christianity was used to enslave people and still is when you talk about missionaries and stuff, because of all those savages, right?
Right.
Because the only way they can't be established is if they believe in Jesus Christ, right?
There we go.
Oh. Okay, because I, you know, when white people say that Christianity had nothing to do with Jim Crow, it just boggles me, because again, I didn't see any Muslim bombing churches in Alabama.
Right, nor atheists, nor Jews,
or Jews,
or Hindus, or practitioners of Shinto, or Buddhism. Or Jains, or animists.
Or any of them. Or, because I'm thinking those are those God-loving, Jesus-loving white folks down south.
The very ones.
Okay.
I mean, we even had a few trials to prove that that's who done it.
Right. Well, see, but then again, you don't have too many trials, because, you know, even if you did have a trial, then the worst thing that's going to happen is that they just get inconvenienced because of the jury of their peers. When they were bombing churches and lynching and murdering people, even for those that were actually brought to trial, if ever. I'm just saying.
Well,
I'm really calm today, because I'm not going to...
I'm proud. I got to tell you, I'm proud of you. We got a little background. We got a little background noise going on, and it's making you kind of hard to hear. But apart from that, no, I'm proud. You're maintaining very nicely. Thank you. Wait. Hello. Losing you, Tracy. Tracy.
Oh.
Tracy.
Sorry, I'm right here.
Oh, there you. Oh, you are so much better now.
I unplugged something. Hold on. I unplugged the wrong thing. Can you hear me now?
I got you loud and clear.
Okay, so when you start talking about, I just wrote a paper. It's one of those funny things when you go to a liberal progressive school. And the stuff that I get to write about. So one of my papers I wrote about the people's chapter in the People's History by Howard Zinn.
Yes.
And basically how he talked about how pissed off, one of the reasons how like slavery started is because how pissed off the white people were that they could not enslave Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Indians basically laughed at them. You know, here they're going, wait, we have better guns, better weapons and all this, but we can't force them into anything. And the Indians are like, fuck no, you can't. You would rather die. And so even though we helped you show you how to, you know, feed yourself and fend for yourself, you're trying to take our shit, we're done. Y'all on your own. And so then they're like, well, what are we going to do? We need people to, you know, we need people to take care of us. We need people to, you know, do our crops and our fields. So what are we going to do? Let's enter the Africans. Because, see, what I love, I call it a true sense of the home court advantage. You snatch away a strong and noble people and put them on through the middle passage or something that could take months. And you stack them into, you know, basically like sardines into, let's see, the holes are bolts and they can't move. They have to piss, eat, and everything in the same spot so that the people on the bottom are getting the excrement, women's menstrual cycles and stuff. Oh, by the way, then the women also have to worry about being raped.
Yeah, there's that.
About that.
And we're not that. And we're not talking about Star Parker verbal rape either, are we?
No. We're talking, you know. Rape.
Yeah, you want to jump in on that? Did you catch that clip?
No, who's Star? Wait, verbal rape? What is verbal rape?
Yeah, Star Parker went to the prayer breakfast and everything, and said that when Barack Hussein Obama went to talking about how Christians had killed people over the centuries, that he just verbally raped the crowd. It was a verbal rape, she said.
Oh, a verbal rape. Okay, I got some verbal rape for her. Fuck you, bitch. How about that? Okay.
I'll take cards in that game.
You know,
I'll see your FU and raise you go to hell.
Yeah, right? and kiss my happy black ass. So you're on the boat and then you get watching and they don't forget about the seasoning, because see, first of all, you have to be seasoned and made into a slave. And then you get put somewhere where you don't know anybody, you don't know your culture's gone, your people are gone. And so what Zen was saying is, you have the Indians had their country. This was their land. This was their people. They knew what was going on. And then the Europeans had their culture, and so they were good. But then you have people who have nothing. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they are. And then you have this psychological. Because a lot of, yes, there was a lot of physical brutality, but a lot of it was psychological. Because you then get told that you are nothing. Your culture is nothing. You are less than human. Because see, when you are told that, because not only are you telling people that they're less than human, you have to make sure you realize that you have to have that, what is the cognitive dissonance? Because see, if you start believing that people, they're not people and they're not human, then that gives you the right to treat them as such. So then you have that. And all this was done in the name of God. Because then, like you said, they used the Bible to say, you know, slaves obey your masters as the Lord would as you would obey the Lord. So then you use religion. And then you have now 2015, and then you have Trayvon Martin. You have this name of black, young black man being killed, or an older black man, or me just walking into a room and still having to be looked at as though I am nothing. I have to prove myself. But no, it has to do with Christianity. Mm-mm.
Right.
I just went on the ramp.
And as Carol Baker noted in the chat room a few minutes ago, they love your rants.
But it makes my soul cry. It absolutely makes my soul cry, because then you have him talking about Martin Luther King Jr. When the right wing starts to use Martin Luther King Jr., then you know there's just something wrong. But see, they don't use Martin Luther King finally, in the last year, because I finally realized that white people have no, or not white people, but certain people, the government, no one, these people do not have a conscience. That you cannot talk to people on a conscious level when they have no conscience. And so when you get to the point where this is when you need legislation, there was a speech that he gave that I was listening to on KPFK about, you know, that we still have, you know, this is saying you have to need to wait because the hearts of man will take care of it and we'll be okay. And my team was like, yeah, that's cool. And I hope that gets to that point. But the thing is, we have to have legislation. We have to have legislation about taking care of the common good, for the common good. We have to have we have to make sure.
Well, but there's common good, and then there's common good. And,
well, yeah. And our common good is nowhere near what their common good is.
Right. Our common good's a little too common.
It's a little too common because then you start thinking, you know, oh, maybe we should, you know, have better schools. Maybe we should have health care. Or maybe we should take some of that money out of the war effort and put it back into infrastructure. I don't know. You know, because I kind of like, I mean, I live in California, so we do a pretty good job with our infrastructure. But then I'm watching what's happening on your part, in your part of the country, with what's happening with, you know, the snow and roads crumbling and bridges crumbling. It terrifies me that if I ever decided to take a road trip and go across this great nation, if I'm going to make it on these roads, especially some of these bridges that were built during, I don't know, after the during the New Deal, and people think that shit doesn't need to be repaired.
Right. I mean, all those bridges that were built on all those interstate highways that were built because of that communist Dwight Eisenhower wanting to build socialism roads all over America, Tracy. America's just got to America's just got to be better than its socialist urges.
Yeah.
The free market, you know, look, if we need roads, the free market will build us roads. If we need bridges, the free market will build us bridges.
No, it won't. I mean, it'll build them, but then if they will use substandard materials, they will not have to be regulated, and, you know, stuff like that. Because why? Money. One of the things that I love about, you know, listening to people like you and out here KPFK, because we are, you know, stations like you guys are listener funded. Unfortunately, most of our listeners don't have any money. That's why, because I get into these arguments with people that are saying about the liberal media and blah, blah, blah. And there's just as many liberal radio stations as there are white ring. And I'm like, how? I said, yes, there's probably a lot of liberal stations, but they they're funded by other people. They're not funded by the Koch brothers. They're not funded by corporations. They're not funded by people who could give a damn about us. They're funded by the people who, their main idea about America is to see how much they can get out of it and damn the rest of you.
Well, there you go.
Like I was talking about,
the fact of the matter is, no, you're right. So-called liberal media has to scrape by on a wing and a prayer and a hope, and patched bicycle inner tubes and the like. But I am proud to say that Tony's challenge for this evening has resulted in it being met and doubled by our buddy Sal. So, you know, $50 to go, and we've got tonight covered.
See. But the thing is, the people, this is what tickles me or saddens me when they talk about the liberal media. That we are so strong and, you know, our word, everything that we shape. I mean, and I wouldn't even say liberal media. I take back progressive media because I am learning that there is a distinct difference because when you have progressive people, they will talk about the stuff that matters, and they are not worried about, you know, losing funding because it's not popular. So today I met a new person, you know me, I'm always like a year behind of what's happening or who's, so I listened to KPFK and they were talking about Chris Hedges. And how he had the audacity during when the invasion of Iraq first started and said this might not be a good idea. And once he said that, he was no longer part of, you know, the New York Times. But thank goodness there are outlets for him to say, you know, this is some bullshit. I listened to him, they did a thing on him, and they were talking, he was talking about how most people in America who have been in school have been fed a lie, especially about our history, about Christianity and how it's been used as a tool to suppress people and to oppress people. And especially during the Civil Rights Movement, you know, when I think about the Civil Rights Movement, I thank goodness, I thank God for it, and I thank God for the people who gave their lives for the Civil Rights Movement. But even still, it's that, you know, weight on the Lord. And I'm all for waiting on the Lord, but when you're dealing with crazy white people, waiting on the Lord ain't going to help. And turning the other cheek ain't going to help. And the more I learn to read about Malcolm X, the more I'm understanding about that by any means necessary. Because it frightens me to think that back then, that just because you were black or a woman or anything, they could run up on you and lynch you and nothing would happen. But there's no difference from lynching Emmett Till to, like I said, the killing of Trayvon Martin. Nothing happened to the men who lynched him, and nothing happened to Trayvon Martin's murderer. So has anything changed in the last, 50-some-odd years? Or is there a chance that it will change?
I think there's always a chance.
I think there is. I mean,
but you have to analyze that chance, Tracy, within the context of the world in which we live. To go back to a previous Moran Monday theme, we've got a country that can't even agree that it's a good idea to vaccinate children against childhood diseases.
Yes, man, and see, of course, that started, you know, the measles outbreak started at the happiest place on earth. And then, like you said, I remember when my son got chicken pox because kids were coming to school that hadn't been vaccinated. And this was before the whole, you know, vaccinate your kids, you're going to get autism bullshit.
Well, and note, we started off the program with an OMG from some goober on Fox who said, "What if California doesn't allow religious exemptions for vaccinations? The next thing they'll be forcing abortions."
What? So they want to
just get
abortion?
Yeah, right. Vaccinating our children against vaccinating all children with no religious exemptions against childhood illnesses. The next step is everybody has to get an abortion. Probably even me if I was in California. Everybody, and certainly that terrified wingnut asshole. He'd probably have to go all the way through sexual reassignment surgery. They'd have to clone and grow him a uterus and some ovaries, stick them in him. Have him take, then get him pregnant and force him to have an abortion.
Now, okay, so here's my thing. I got my shots and everything. My son's got his shots. He doesn't have autism. My wife doesn't have autism. I don't have autism.
And vaccines have never caused anyone to have autism. Those brain changes take place in utero.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if like I said earlier, if we want to blame mercury for it, I think that's worth studying. But don't go look into vaccines for it because of the tiny amounts involved. Go looking to all the mercury we get into our bodies unconsciously from the air, from the fish, the water. I mean, God, wasn't there a huge mercury scandal surrounding one of the organic rice producers in California
mm-hmm.
in the last couple of years?
Exactly. Well, you think about Marvin Gaye song, The Ecology. What was that song made? 1970, whatever. And back then, he was talking about the ecology and, you know, the mercury in the fish and the water and pollution. And that was 40 some odd years ago. So, if you, like you said, if you got, but then again, if you start studying mercury and it affects, and you got to start talking, you know, going to what we are eating, and then you got to start going into talking to people in Monsanto and GMOs and all that. What are they using for in our, you know, to fertilize our food and the ground and stuff like that? What, and you know, so you can't, you could go after, I'm surprised they're going after vaccines, because that means that's messing with the big pharma money, isn't it?
And of course, that comes with the turf. Oh, big pharma! Oh, God, vaccines! Yeah.
It's like, so, but that's Mr. Huckabee. Now, he's talking again, because, you know, I have this thing about, you know, Jim Crow and the lasting effects, and now we have the new Jim Crow of the, you know, the preschool to straight from the preschool to prison pipeline that is now, you know, our prison, our, you know, for young black men of color, black and brown. How is it that we as black people basically make enough, maybe what, 13% of the population of this country, but yet we're 33 or so more percent in the jails?
Yeah.
And nobody. Oh. So what is this I hear about Ferguson? About their debtors' prison?
Well, more or less.
Okay. And who are those people being thrown into prison?
Poor people.
Again, this is why, you know, as much as I think about, you know, because it's so expensive to live in California, especially Los Angeles, I shudder to think about moving anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because here we have consumer protection.
Well, you've got, in places like California, Oregon, Washington, Massachusetts, you've got the last, and the fact that the list is that short is pretty dismaying in the first place, Tracy. But the fact that you've got a little bit of a functioning government out there tells you a lot about the breakdown of the rest of this fading empire.
Mm-hmm.
But it should also serve as a wake-up call, because when there are that few when the number of states left that are fully functioning has become that small.
But you can name them all. You just done four, what was that, four states?
Yeah. When the number becomes that small, that means you are easily targeted. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're next. I started saying that a year or so ago. You're next. California. Now that the Koch brothers went to Wisconsin and they broke the last remaining vestiges of progressive government there. New York is struggling. Massachusetts is hanging on, but they've got a Republican governor now, and they do that every now and then. The rest of the country is broken into a million tiny pieces. You're up. You are up. Don't kid yourself. They will come for you. They're coming for you. The Koch brothers are coming for you.
They tried to buy the Los Angeles Times, but thank God or was it Murdoch? Who tried to buy the Times? Was it the Koch brothers? I think the Koch brothers tried to buy the Times, LA Times. But they got stopped.
Or was it them? But no, screw some little newspaper. No.
Oh, they're about the whole state.
No, they're coming after your government.
Oh, yeah.
And it might take a lot of money, but you know what? They just pledged 800. They just brought together a whole bunch of booger eaters and toenail toothpickers to pledge $899 million for the next campaign cycle to finish off the United States, to kill us good and dead, to make sure that the idea of representative self-government is taken out behind the barn and never heard from again, or sent fishing in Fredo's boat, or whatever analogy we like. You know, even California has its problems. Y'all can't agree that fracking is not a good idea for California.
Yeah, and you know, Governor Brown is like, well, look into it. What is it to look into? There's absolutely nothing to look into.
I drove over, and granted, this is West Virginia, not California, but I drove over to help my daughter Margie celebrate her 21st birthday yesterday, and we had a lovely special time. Isn't that something? 21? And and she's got 183 or 184 likes on her on her birthday picture on my Facebook page, and she's just tickled pink about it. But on the way there, of course, I drive past the home of my daughter, my son-in-law, and my three grandchildren. Every time I see those little people, it just makes me come near to weeping for the joy of seeing them. I just love them. And before I came on down the hill to where their house is, I noticed up to the right of me, there used to be this big, beautiful, cleared off, rich, green, rolling hillside, because the mountains over there are not like the mountains over here.
Now, what is your county
there? It's another county in the western part of in the western part of West Virginia, and so I was shocked because you know I was over there a month or so ago and this stuff wasn't there, but where there used to be this big, beautiful, rolling green hill, they're putting in a frack pad, Tracy. They're putting in a frack pad within a quarter mile, half mile tops of where my grandbabies live. And I wanted to scream, Tracy. Because, see, it's not just, and this is another one of those places where we get a little bit lost amongst the forest for all the damn trees. We know now that with fracking, it's not just what it does to the water. You know, you can see when water gets funky. When water catches fire, you go, ah! You know. But by then, it's too late. It's the stuff you can't see that can kill you. And we know now that there are tons of, we know now that there are significant amounts of ultrafine particulates that come off of these fracking sites.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be blowing at my babies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still dealing with the ultrafine particulates that are coming off of some mountaintop removal.
Yeah, it's the same principle.
And then now you're going to ask, let's go fracking in the mix also. You know, but who's been harming? Just a bunch of hippos.
Yeah, just some precious 8 and 7 and 5 year old hillbilly children. I mean, you know, whatevs.
You know, it's when again one of the the paper I'm gonna read the Skip the Horn. My Horn family does a month. Part of this paper that I wrote about then. And Zen takes the concept of home court advantage to another level in the following quote. Their helplessness made enslavement easier. The Indians were on their land. The whites were in their own European culture. The blacks had been torn from their land and culture, forced into a situation where the heritage of language, dress, custom, family relations was bit by bit obliterated, except for the remnants that blacks could hold on by sheer extraordinary persistence. Zen brings to light an aspect of the slave trade that is not often discussed. Many people think that Africans were brought to this country and they instantly became slaves. This was not the case. The process of turning once
turning one's proud and free people into slaves was a systematic and regimented process of brutality and inhumane treatment. I constantly wonder how my ancestors survived. And then I go on to talk about how the psychological effects was and physical. But one of the things I talk about was how, you know, one of the things that boggles us, and we have to learn as progressives to learn how to talk to people from your part of the country, and, you know, as we fondly call them booger eaters, and, you know, people sitting in their double wides with the beer saying life beaters, that's what I call them. But voting against their own self-interest because of racism. But one of the things I wrote is about to accomplish this, there was a discipline of hard labor, the breakup of slave families, the lulling effects of religion to great mischief, as well, and the creation of disunity among slaves by separating them into field slaves and more privileged house slaves. I talk about that archetype. And what I talk about, really, is another illustration of the archetype that is still manifest today is the constant battle between poor whites voting against their own self-interest in order to hold on to the privilege, not the privilege in quotation, of being white. This is an example of how racism is stronger than classism. In colonial America, however, racism had not yet become the way of thinking between poor whites and enslaved blacks. They didn't see race. They saw the common thread of oppression. And the following quote then introduces us to the original 99%. One fear was greater than the fear of black rebellion in the new American colony. That was the fear that discontented whites would join black slaves to overthrow the existing order. In the early years of slavery, especially before racism was a way of thinking, was firmly engraved, while white indentured servants were often treated as gladly as black slaves, there was a possibility of cooperation. And this was in the 1700s. So they knew.
Yes.
They knew what they were doing, and they still know what they are doing. It started off with the plantation class, but now we're going up to the 1%ers. And people they don't get it, do they, Bob?
No. But this is but this is like the stuff that Dr. Bill teaches us about. You know, you've got to want. You cannot pick up the nuances, or really the essential facts of America's existence, Tracy, without wanting to. You can't get it by osmosis. You have to pursue it. You have to seek to know it. And so when you're talking about teabaggers and the like, you know, they're presented this phony, baloney, fake history. Aren't you proud of yourself, you little moron? Look, you've learned some American history. Mm-hmm. And they go, look, we've learned American history. America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. Isn't that nice?
No, they
wasn't,
because they weren't Jews were not included in this. I'm sorry. Did I do that?
I think your external monologue got loose. Your internal monologue got loose again.
And when they say Judeo-Christian, again, the only reason why evil genitals care about the Jews is because they're hoping for Armageddon. Because of the, you know, because of this misguided thing, as long as we help the Jews do what they're doing, then, you know, Jesus will come back. Okay, for me, being Christian, Jesus don't need our help. He's going to come back when he's getting ready. Nothing that you guys are going to do is going to make him decide, oh, well, I'm just going to rush this along. No.
No.
You know, but like you said, where's my hockey puck?
You never want to turn this program on without having that handy.
And I try, you know, I really try not to get upset.
But then again, I can't help but get upset. My wife gets mad because I don't watch the news like she wants. She's like, you don't watch the news because I can't stand how the news is presented. Oh, look, here in L.A., there's a police chase going on right now in Willowbrook, and that's what's on TV right now. But when I see how my folks are treated, I was watching something the other day, and there's a police chase, and the guy got out of the car, and they sent the dogs after him. And I'm thinking to myself, and it just made me think of Selma, or just any, you know, well, let's start with how they send, you know, dogs after slaves, and they use attack dogs during the nonviolent, you know, peace marches in the civil rights movement. And I see dogs now, and I'm thinking about how, you know, there's all these myriad of thoughts about, you know, how our police are now militarized and how our civil liberties are being eroded every single day. Every single day until we get to the point where we will be living in a police state. But then again, everybody says, well, we're doing this for your good. We're making sure we're taking care of you. And I'm like, no, you just want us to be, what is the word I'm looking for, Bob? Passers? No. Prisoners in our own country? What?
There we go.
Okay. Prisoners in our own country. And then speaking of prisoners in our own country, I got into a heated debate, not a heated debate, but I was talking to one of my black Republican friends, who's a woman.
You need to get that?
And I, no, that's Jan.
Oh, okay.
And I asked, you know, I asked my Republican friends these questions, especially my, why are you a part of a party that does not want you in their party? Who is doing everything within their power to make sure that, you know, we don't exist. They don't include us. They don't want you. They don't like you. Well, it's about fiscal responsibility. I'm like, that's you today.
Just going to rise above it. Right?
Yeah. But, you know, I don't consider myself a Democrat anymore. I consider myself an independent because there's really nothing in the Democratic Party that has anything to do with me. And I am terrified of the prospect of Hillary Clinton being our next president. But then what's the alternative? Why do I hear cricket?
Because I ain't got no answers. I mean, I do have an answer. My answer is to approach any national election in the United States of America from a position of reality, Tracy. And the American reality is that we don't, you know, there's not going to be any more FDRs.
No.
There aren't going to be any more JFKs.
No.
No more LBJs. We're going to have a procession of either right wing or center right wing or center, but certainly no left leadership in this country, because empires don't do that.
No.
Especially not capitalist empires. I mean, I think you could make an argument. And I'm probably not the first and won't be the last to make it. Even the Soviet Union was not a left empire, because its power and its leadership structure was essentially authoritarian right wing.
To go over some of the issues.
With a thin veneer of Marxist agitprop over the top of it. You know, empires don't do left. So, you know, my response is in the election of an imperial administrator, which is what the presidency is, I'm going to choose the candidate who is not as right-wing as the other one.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Chris just talked about this morning, about empire and what has to happen for to this country. The empire, that's what Malcolm X had it right, and I just posted an article in this chat room, which is a very interesting read, about how, what Chris has just talked about, is how, even before Martin Luther King said it, Malcolm X said it, that empires will not be this country until it's no longer empire will not be the country that it needs to be. It won't be. And so you think about this country, and you talk, and you think about how this country, you know, people don't, when you think of, and this is what happens when you go to school and you start reading and you investigate. When you think about what an empire is, you think about the British Empire, and you think about where, you know, how at one point the time was set on the British Empire.
Yeah.
And you think about World War II and everything that the United States and British Britain was doing to keep hold of their empire.
I complained that life was a little bit stern.
Nobody talks about how, you know, yes, the British and the United States forces, you know, fought against the Nazis, but it was the Russians that did most of the footwork.
I don't want you to do anything until we don't hear about that, do
we?
Needed to cancel someone.
Because if you tell them, if you find out that the Russians had a lot to do with winning the World War II, then you have to give credit to those common loosey bastard people, Soviet and common spies.
This lack of staff is.
Maybe. I don't know.
I know. Well, Tracy, it is awfully good hearing from you this evening.
It is great hearing from you, because I know I'm going on this rant.
Well, no. I have to say this much. You know, we worry. We fret. We do that professionally. If we don't hear from somebody for a while, we begin to worry about them. You know, have they been, you know, eaten by bears or anything like that?
No, I just, like I said, I post on the home page at least once or twice a month. You know, I post the pictures of the wedding and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm still here.
I know.
I love you guys. And it's just that I don't get, it's not off. Now, here's the thing. Now that I don't have a wedding to pay for.
There we go. Exactly.
By the way,
you got a little fan mail in from Barbie in Iowa. She says, tell Tracy we are all afraid of what comes after Obama leaves office.
Yeah. One of the things that I heard today, I'm finding new people to be a fan of, and I'm actually, Oliver Stone was on, and I guess he has the book out, but he was on the radio show with Democracy Matters, I think that's what the show called. Oh, it's not Democracy Now, but he was talking about somebody that I had never even heard of. Who was Roosevelt's vice president before Truman?
Wallace.
And, oh, my God, they were talking about what kind of country this would have been had Wallace been vice president when FDR died instead of Truman. Because what they had a speech of his, and I know you got to go, but they did a good speech of him and talked about how race has something to do with superiority. And he was referring to he was talking about George Washington Carver. And what he's done, and it has nothing to do with the only thing it has to do with somebody having a chance. Mm-hmm. Go figure, right?
Wallace had to be gotten rid of because he was scaring he was scaring the bejesus out of the little fascist wannabes.
And that's what that's what Oliver Stone talks about. I guess he has a book and out about it, and a 12-part documentary that I might just go ahead and buy. But that's what he was saying, how the people wanted Wallace, because at one point FDR said he wasn't going to run again because of the way this country was going. If the democracy wasn't going for the people by the people, then he wanted no part of it. And so then, you know, this is what they said. It was like watching a Frank Capra movie as to how Truman became vice president instead of Wallace. And so this is one of those things I'm looking for. This is why I love to read. And this is why I love this radio station. And once Jan and I are breathing again and like have that discretionary income that I used to have before I decided to have two weddings last year, I will be back to, you know. Oh, before I forget, did you ever get your copy of the book?
No.
Okay, see. So I'll send out another copy because that makes me nuts. But anyway, these are the things that, this is why I love this station. And this is why I wish there were more stations like you. And this is why horn fans.
Or we could just make the horn so massive and ubiquitous that I do a 6-hour program every day, and so there'd be twice as much of me.
Yeah, that would be freaking awesome. You know, between you and Dr. Bill, you guys be tag team, and it would be or have Dr. Bill on every day, or what have you. It would be awesome thoughts. So in any way, as I'm gonna let you go. Thank you guys for loving and worrying about me. I am fine. I'm just settling into what I am now calling my wife and I's new normal. And we are just learning how to be a couple now. Now I got to actually pay attention to her. It's kind of frightening. Just kidding.
Well, Tracy, you have yourself a lovely evening. Think of me next time you go by the taco, the shrimp taco truck, will you?
Every time I do, I have one for you.
You know, you can also invoke invoke my spirit or whatever at In-N-Out Burger, because I've never had one of those and I keep hearing how dadgum good they are.
You know, whenever you get out here, and you know, hopefully it'll be sooner than later. One of the things somebody's asked me, if you won the lottery, what would you do? Besides, one of the things I would do was fund your radio station, so you could be off the grid, and so that whenever, you know, the power grid goes down where you live, it wouldn't matter, and that you would have state-of-the-art computers and whatnot and so forth, and a discretionary fund to come out to California just because you wanted shrimp tacos.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh.
Of course, I would be dangerous with that kind of a discretionary fund because I might just fly off to Tokyo to have sushi at Jiro.
Well, there you go. I mean, but see, if you had a discretionary, the thing is, if you had a discretionary fund of any sort, then you would pay it forward before you paid yourself.
We try.
So anyway, you guys take care. I love my family, and I promise it won't be so long. It's my next call, I promise.
Okay, see, do you stick to that, all right?
Yes, sir, I'll share.
You take care, Tracy. Say hi to Jan for us.
You too, my dear. Bye. I will. Bye-bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from L.A. Hadn't heard from Tracy in a while. And, well, it puts us all a little bit more at ease to hear from her. We are at 12 minutes before the hour, 12 minutes remaining in the program this evening. And I did want to do a quick fundraising update. Thank you very kindly to Sal. As noted, Sal saw and raised Tony's challenge for the evening. So we are now at $100 raised for the evening and $50 to go, and that will actually help us take care of the holes that will exist with me not being on the air on Wednesday and possibly Thursday, depending on how timing works out. Anybody wanting to jump in and finish off that the last 50 of the 150 or some portion thereof is, all I can say is that it is tremendously appreciated and that it is how we remain on the air. And, you know, we exist on the last frayed shoestring of a dry rotted pair of 1964 Chuck Taylor Converse, okay? It's just how it is. So all help is great help, and we appreciate it. And thank you very kindly, Sal. And thank you, Tony and Chico, for making the challenge. Let's go over to the Skype line and talk to Larry. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey there. I just wanted to call in and say hello, and I hope you're doing okay, Bob.
I'm doing great, thanks.
All right. I appreciate that. It's been a heavy weekend, if you might imagine. I hope you had a good time with your daughter.
Oh, we had a wonderful time. She chose to make her first legal adult beverage cocktail a Mai Tai.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And she enjoyed it immensely, and I think something like 185 likes on the picture on my Facebook page, so it's all cool.
I'm so thrilled to hear Tracy. I haven't heard Tracy in a long time. I'm glad that she called in. I'm hoping we'll hear from Sandra one of these days. I miss hearing from her too. I heard Chris Hedges, he was on Against the Grain, or at least they played a speech that he gave at a talk, and it was a very good speech. I'm beginning to come to the realization, I guess, where you are right now, Bob, about, you know, that there probably isn't going to be any swift changeover
In order for us to have significant structural change in the way this country operates, we would have to have significant structural change in media, in ballot access, in polling place access, in women's rights, in environmental justice, in labor rights. They have just about, and I'm talking on a national scope, you know, some localities are better than others, but in large part, this country has been driven to the right, and yet at the same time, if you offer the people opportunities to do things that are a little bit lefty, they will. Look at all the minimum referenda that passed in the November election at the same time that Republicans were winning elections. This country is a little bit psychotic. Maybe it's a lot psychotic.
Yeah.
But remember, time out. I got a sneeze coming on here. Hang on.
It's okay. It's fine.
Nobody needed to hear that. Anyway, remember that the change that we got coming out of the Great Depression with the FDR administrations only happened because the Republicans had been so thoroughly given their heads that they had run us into the ground and set the country on fire.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't think they're... Had it not been for the Great Depression, do you think FDR would have become president? Because I don't.
Yeah.
I think Hoover would have gotten another term, and maybe then it would be Alf Landon or something.
Well, I guess...
Or Dewey.
I guess what really gets me is that... Matt, I'm a little bit depressed this weekend. I've had the cold and everything else, and it's been a heavy weekend, and all that. But, Carol, not Carol Baker, but the Carol out of Australia.
Carol Abel.
Yeah, who talked about the political polarity. And, you know, I brought up to my counselor about the political polarity and explained what the thesis was. And she said, well, do you think that people are able to get in and see what your thought processes are, and they're able to get into your thought processes? And she said, what kind of tinfoil hat are you wearing? And I didn't know how to respond to that, because I do feel that the right wing, the new right, and the right wing has been incredibly successful at being able to get underneath people's... They've been able to completely restructure the way in which they've been able to. Where I'm going. They've been able to restructure people's experience of themselves in a culture and experience themselves.
Sure, and the way we think about ourselves as a nation. Again, I go back to what I said earlier, Larry. We are a country that cannot agree in 2015. That vaccinating all our children against disease is a good idea.
So I guess the point being, you know, I talked to Lottie and I talked to Devin and I talked to various people on the chat, and they try to explain And I wish I had something different to say, or I wish I had a more creative way of saying it. But it feels like a one-note song. But they keep on saying, Larry, you know, it's just going to have to. It's not going to get any better. It's not going to get any easier, not for anybody. And it, you know, eventually people will become aware of these things. But unfortunately, it's not going to happen anytime in the next few decades. I guess what I'm mostly concerned about, without sounding like I'm self-centered, which a lot of people think I am, I'm worried about getting older and being alone and being, you know, and not having, you know, a community, or not being able to feel a part of a community that really makes sense. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of an alien in a, you know, in an alien world that is like an alien runaway train that I'm just sitting around watching. It's passing. And I hope things get better or improve. I hope that we can, you know, that we'll all, you know, get beyond our, you know, the personal, you know, the, I guess, our own personal points of view, and be able to see and be able to appreciate others and get to a common meeting point. But I'm living in a world that I don't quite understand, and that may be part and parcel that I haven't been a part of it, and that I'm getting older, and that
I wouldn't blame it all on that though, Larry.
Okay, but so I'm hoping that
it's hard. I mean, I presume that everyone here loves their country, at least on a philosophical level. And it's hard to see the country you love descend in. Well, it's like being part of a dysfunctional family. You know, you hope that mommy and daddy will stop fighting, and you hope that they'll not be quite so dysfunctional. But you know what? We're dysfunctional in this country.
Well, I'm hoping you have a good. I'm hoping you have a good evening. I appreciate the Horn Group. I appreciate the Malloy Group. I just wish that there was more that we could do. But I guess the best thing that we have is we have our, you know, the people around us, and that's what we have to. You know, Mercedes, I said to her before she left today, I said, you know, I don't often tell you how much I care about you, but I do. And she understands it. Not much that I can do outside of just have her coming to help me out, but she is a rather important person, and you know, you all are pretty important to me, you know. So I hope we can pull through all this.
Well, we're gonna be okay. So Larry, you have yourself a good evening, and we'll talk soon.
Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Bye now. Time to get out of here. Thanks for joining in on Moran Monday. We sadly didn't get to all the Morans, but that's kind of what Titanic Tuesday's for, isn't it? Yes, it is. And we will be back with exactly that tomorrow evening. Remember, no program on Wednesday, possibly no program on Thursday, but we'll deal with that as it comes along. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. We do have $50 to go in fundraising for the evening, if anybody wants to jump in on that. And thank you to Tony and to Sal for what they did this evening. It's very kind and very helpful. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. And happy birthday, news ninja Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.